Hello and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. On the program this week, we're talking with Dr. Christine Grease, Director of the Concussion Program at JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you, Joel?
Excellent. Nice to have you on the program. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. It's lovely to be here today.
Well, thank you. I want to talk about, obviously you deal with concussions there, but I want to talk about, or at least start with, how COVID has affected the patients that you treat on a daily basis.
Well, it's very important to note that we all know that COVID is a systemic illness. There are many different organs that are affected when a patient is infected with the virus. We also know that from a rehab medical perspective, we follow patients when there are chronic conditions or illnesses or disabilities that are affecting the patient's life, their quality of life, their well-being, their overall health. And as a matter of fact, we are noticing very interestingly enough that COVID brain fog has been noticed in the medical community as a quote unquote true neurological condition. We all experienced, some way or another, some impact and how COVID has affected our lives. Mm-hmm. We do know somebody, and everybody really knows somebody who's been affected by COVID and has these ongoing symptoms that are very vague, this fatigue, this difficulty with maintaining attention properly, and their mental alertness is affected. And so we in the rehab medicine department at JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute have actually been very aware of these things. And given that we are also brain injury medicine certified physicians, we have recognized and know very well how to diagnose and then manage some of these symptoms. And we do have the tools. So how do we really diagnose things like this? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, best way is to really talk to the patient and understand how long they've had the infection for and how long have they been suffering with their symptoms and what type of symptoms are they experiencing. I've had patients come to the clinic in the office and say, hey, I have trouble focusing, I have trouble thinking, I'm having headaches, I'm just not myself, I'm not sharp, I'm not clear. I find myself napping when I never used to be a napper. We work with them slowly, and we have ways and tools to diagnose and treat it.
Yeah, so you mentioned the brain fog. We all get that once in a while, right? But you're talking about consistent, daily?
Yes.
So that's a sure sign. You're not just going to blow it off because it's something that's happening consistently. Are there any symptoms that maybe don't happen consistently and you need to be on the lookout for?
A lot of times the symptoms that it's important to be on the lookout for is fluctuations in headache and intermittent headache. So, sometimes once in a blue moon, we'll all experience some sort of a headache. If it's stress related, fatigue related, whatever it may be, diet related, pressure, weather pressure related. But it's really important to notice these symptoms, especially after COVID infection, because the question is it correlated with blood pressure changes? We do know that COVID affects the endovascular system. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important to kind of keep it for patients to be aware of this and to be aware of what their body is telling them.
Are there symptoms that perhaps, let me ask you this, have you experienced a patient who came to you after a long time of having symptoms because they were so on and off, and maybe they were someone who had headaches once in a while before, and they're getting headaches now, but it didn't seem inconsistent?
Yes, I've had patients who've actually, their headaches have not just been normal headaches, but they've actually transferred into full-blown migraines. And now they have a migraine diagnosis when they never did. We all know very well there's a difference between a headache and a migraine. A migraine usually puts a person out of commission, right? They have these symptoms. And what differentiates a migraine from a headache is really not just that it's so severe, but it's more so it presents itself with an aura ahead of time. So almost like a warning signal, a trigger, a sort of a sense that something, significant is coming on. Some of these patients experience that when they've never had that before.
Okay. Are there any other symptoms that maybe you didn't mention that we should be on the lookout for?
Generally, patients will experience not just a fog and a mental slowness, but sometimes a sort of a dizziness or a symptoms of imbalance and poor coordination. Some patients will say, I've just not been on my exact coordination, and I'm not set. My depth perception is a little bit off. Mm. I've been missing a few steps here and there, more so than usual. I'm noticing it it's affecting the way I function now. I'm having to be a little bit more careful than I was before. And so symptoms of dizziness that can happen, symptoms of changes in appetite, changes in feeding and, you know, habits of food intake in general. We've noticed that hydration status is different. So it's important for a patient, we all know our own bodies, it's important for them to realize specific trends that are happening that weren't there before.
Yeah, okay. So what does the rehab medicine that you do there, what does it look like for the patients who are currently hospitalized with COVID? They're in the hospital.
So it's a little bit different. We have to be very keen on not just the respiratory status. You know, all our COVID patients are, you know, obviously isolated, and they have their own specific set of protocols. You know, we make sure that they still get the rehab and the therapies and all of the different resources that we offer. You know, but we have a specialized system in order to not, you know, cross-contaminate or, you know, spread infection. But it's also important to know that we are keeping an eye out on their blood pressure parameters. COVID patients tend to have a little bit of a higher pressure reading. They're overall in an inflammatory response. You know, we've been more aware of all of those different signs and symptoms. We also have, you know, pulmonologist, infectious disease doctor, and a cardiologist on all of the patients, just to make sure that they are being monitored a lot more closely in terms of their cardiopulmonary and respiratory status. You know, besides watching out for their blood pressure, heart rate, checking blood sugars and blood levels very, very keenly to make sure that they are regulated. We get this even in patients who've never had a blood pressure at all and issues with high blood pressure, never taken medications, who all of a sudden have been infected, young patients with no risk factors, and then all of a sudden they're infected and now they're on one or two or three different blood pressure medicines. We do keep an eye out, very close eye out for that. We also watch for their skin changes because remember, COVID affects all the little blood vessels and the larger blood vessels. And so sometimes they have changes in their skin, you know, changes in their risk for getting wounds and infections and things like that. And so we're very keen on being careful with the COVID patients because they're overall inflamed.
So with the blood pressure, how can someone tell, you know, that they had COVID, they were never hospitalized, they got over it, and maybe their blood pressure is up, and maybe that's the only symptom? Is that possible? So would you say that people who had COVID should get their blood pressure checked, or are there signs of high blood pressure to look out for?
So, you know, as we know, sometimes hypertension is silent. You know, there's a saying in medicine among many doctors, it's really silent. However, whenever there is any sort of presentation of a headache, or changes in vision acuity, accuracy, any of those things. It's very important, or even changes in hydration status, it's very important to have a patient check their blood pressure once to two times a day for the time that they are actively quarantining or infection. It's so important. I can't tell you how many times I have actually seen even very young patients, and we're talking teens and people in their 20s with no reason to have hypertension and no medical history of it, who pretty much end up having it just, and that could be the cause of a lot of their symptoms.
Yeah. I mean, you got me thinking, because I had COVID, I got over it. I don't have any other symptoms, but if my blood pressure is high, my blood pressure was never high, but it could be, and I wouldn't know it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, so we were talking about the long-term effects of COVID. What kind of long-term effects do you and your team there notice?
Well, one thing that we are noticing, obviously, is the brain fog. It can linger for weeks to months. I am seeing patients who now we have to do cognitive evaluations on just to determine, is there a deficit in their attention? Is there a deficit in their recall, in their ability to process information efficiently? Is there a problem with it? Are they making errors at school and at work or at home? When they never used to do that. And obviously the patient can't go for a reason. They are noticing that these are changes that are happening, you know, in their daily lives. Is there a difference in their activities of daily living? Because that's what rehab medicine is all about. And so one thing that our team is doing is obviously determining if there is a deficit. We do a cognitive evaluation. And then based off of that, they would get the appropriate therapy. So what does that really mean? It means they may need speech therapy. They may need cognitive therapy to work on those skills, to regain those skills back, or to work through the fatigue in a proper way without exhausting their own bodies. And so our team is excellent and certified in order to actually educate the patients on doing that. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is I may get a patient who has longstanding hypertension, for instance, besides the fatigue and or you know, on, and as a result having ongoing headaches. And so how do we, you know, address that? We have a care team in place. You know, we have excellent referrals that we know to send to that are cardiologists who've dealt with COVID patients, and you know, they're able to kind of appropriately address their issues, their cardiac issues. You know, it's a conditioning issue, for instance, where they just feel. I've had athletes come in, and after their COVID, they've had actually no symptoms during the infective process, but they'll tell me, I can't focus in school. You know, these are college kids who were, you know, previously, you know, normal grades, straight A students, who now having trouble focusing and or their energy is not the same, and we send them to the proper, you know, specialists to be able to address that. So meaning we send them to PT for conditioning. We do work hardening programs, you know, and then we get them back to see, are they good candidates, you know, to help with approach their vitamin status appropriately, their nutrition status appropriately, you know, so we have a whole care team in place.
Now, during the treatment, I mean, do you ever get signs of as to why it happens to some people, you know, the brain fog, for instance, or any, but not others? Some people just, they're fine, and then others have all these issues.
You know what's funny? I used to, there is no clear-cut answer on that.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
I wish there was an answer for that where we know. Although we do know that there is a trend, right? There's patterns. Patients who may have been genetically predisposed to, you know, having certain findings or clinical manifestations later as a result of a disease hit, those are the ones that may manifest with those things. So, for instance, if a patient may have been, let's say they have some underlying just tension headaches, they may be the same patients that are predisposed to getting migraines later on, or their symptoms may be transferred. Okay. We don't know for sure. We actually don't know who's going to get what. But we do know that there is a genetic predisposition to what they end up getting. So I always like to use the analogy of, you know, like, for instance, blood sugar changes. You know, some patients can be on a course of steroids for 5 days and never have an elevation in their blood sugar, but others do get that elevation, and we know that there is a genetic predisposition to it.
We're talking with Dr. Christine Grease, director of the concussion program at JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute. So let's move on to, since, you know, you are at the director of the concussion program, let's talk concussions. Do you know anything about that?
I love talking about concussions. it's my go-to.
Yeah, okay. Well,
I breathe it in every day.
I know you do. I know you do. So what should someone do when they show a sign of a concussion? I think brain fog would be the first sign, right? You're just kind of out of it?
Well, so yeah, speaking of out of it, the way that we, you know, it's funny, Joel, when I was having this conversation with a colleague, and you know, I remember saying to them, well, you know, we were talking about this injury that they had in the past, a sports injury, and they're not really sure if they're attributing it to migraines. And so they said to me, you know what, I don't think I had a concussion. I said, why is that? And he's like, well, you know what, maybe 20 years ago, I don't really think I had it because I never hit my head. I said, well, you know, by definition, it doesn't mean that you have to hit your head. A mild traumatic brain injury, aka concussion, is generally, the definition is forces that are transmitted to brain tissue that cause a neurological disruption in the signals of the cells themselves, the nerve cells. And so that neurological dysfunction translates into, clinically, a patient's nervous system does not function properly. That's a very vague definition. So, A, they don't have to technically hit their head as long as their force is transmitted. We know that because of soldiers who go out to fight overseas and are exposed to, you know, different forces, such as when an explosion, you know, goes off, but they're, you know, maybe a mile away. If they are in that line of force vector of the explosion, they may get concussed, and we know that very well.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so it's or if, like, there's an athlete who really, you know, maybe, like, does a body tackle, but not necessarily hit their head, yet that tackle could be strong enough to shake brain tissue, and that brain tissue, if shaken hard enough, may actually result in neurological manifestations. And so by definition, a concussion is any time a patient experiences some sort of neurological change in their nervous system and their overall body, and they are not out of it. So brain fog can be one of them. A change in vision, a change in all five of your senses, you know, the five senses that we learned about in grade school, a change in any of those senses. So vision, smell, hearing, they can get ringing in the ears, they can get trouble with their balance, trouble, you know, taste changes in their taste, similar to COVID almost, you know, yeah. But it could be any of those things.
You mentioned years ago, are concussions, I don't want to say more prevalent, because they're probably not more prevalent nowadays, but are they noticed more nowadays? Because I'm 99% sure I had a concussion one time when I was in my 20s in a sports. I had a collision, and I was out of it the rest of the day. And I did not even think about the word concussion until years later when someone else was giving a sports story. And I was like, wait a second. I might have had a concussion back then.
Yes. We just named it now.
Yeah.
We have a name to it. Humans have been hitting their heads since they walked on Earth.
But it wasn't called concussion? It wasn't called concussion, let's say.
I don't know what it was called.
25
years
ago?
Funny.
25 years ago.
So 25 years ago, let's say, you know, our definition of brain injury concussion would be you've had to lose consciousness. It had to be for a long period of time. And it was really more because of these manifestations where those are the patients that sought these prolonged treatments. You know, but we do know that a concussion actually, even just by studying mouse models, you know, we do see that the brain releases or a temporary change in these chemicals of the brain that it's releasing as a result of being shaken.
Yeah, it's so strange because I remember that like it was yesterday. I remember how out of it I was. I'm going to use that term, out of it.
Speaking of memory, because you said you remember it, after a brain is concussed, if the brain is shaken strong enough, there is a protective mechanism where our hippocampus, our memory area of the brain, is actually activated so that it doesn't happen to us again. And so after a concussion, a person may remember, besides having obviously a little bit of amnesia, may remember leading up to the injury exact details in terms of sight, smell, everything is heightened in terms of sensory system. You know, and so you would probably, just like you said, a lot of patients will say, I remember exactly what I was wearing. I remember what was happening. I remember the time of day. I remember the color of the car that, you know, or the person that hit me or the shirt or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because there's a heightened sense of response and sensory overload, that occurs, with the injury. And why? It's because our brain is designed to protect itself from not getting hit again. And so what's it going to do? It's going to raise our alert signal so that we don't get ourselves into that same situation the next time.
Right.
And
so
don't get hit the next time.
Well, remember, if we were doing a certain move, let's say, in sports, it's going to come to you, oh, wait, I got a concussion doing it this way.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
So what are the long-lasting effects of a concussion? Is this different for everyone, depending on how hard they hit their head or...
It depends. So it's interesting you say how hard they hit their head. Not necessarily how hard, but it's how often it happens within a short period of time. And so it's been found, we've seen the term chronic traumatic encephalopathy being thrown around, but what really is it? It's really more of multiple subconcussive blows to the brain in a short period of time where the brain has not had a chance to recover from the previous blow, and now there is another hit, and then a subsequent hit, and a third, and a fourth, and a fifth, you know, until the brain just develops all of these damaging proteins. And so those that have long-term effects are those that have been hit multiple times in a short period.
So let's talk about multiple. Let's talk about multiple concussions. Let's talk about a teenager who plays sports and they get a concussion, and then they're better, so to speak, and then maybe a couple weeks later they get another one. What are the effects of that? Like, when do you stop playing sports? Is it when you have some sort of... How do you deal with that?
Well,
because multiple concussions cannot be good.
Hey, yes, absolutely. So, yes, we do see this a lot. First of all, it's important to see, well, why are they getting hit again? Studies have shown that patients who get hit, it's because they haven't recovered fully from their initial concussion. What does that mean? It means their vision and their balance system is off. It means their neck muscles are not strong enough for the muscles in the neck to absorb all that force. Hence, that force is going to brain tissue instead. That's first. Second, studies have actually shown that football players, after all their symptoms have resolved, and this is done at professional levels, these studies, and they have found that those football players who have had visual changes in their vision, changes in their convergence, and their saccades, which are two fancy terms for eye function. Those athletes, even when all other symptoms have been resolved, if they do return to the game day, are 45 times more likely to sustain another concussion. And so what does that mean? It means that from the first time around, their recovery did not complete itself. It didn't come to closure for them to be able to handle another hit to the head.
So what do you...
And so those... Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
What do you tell parents? What, you know, do you tell them your child shouldn't be playing sports or... were doing, like, how do you, you know, what do you do?
Well, it's a good question. It depends, obviously, on the case, on the sport, on the athlete, on how determined they are to recover, their support system around them. A lot of times, I actually, surprisingly enough, get the parents who don't want their child playing, but the child definitely wants to play.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm dealing
absolutely
with the situation right now where an athlete, you know, he would be better off playing and he loves the social interaction. And I don't want to take him out of that game either, you know. But so first thing I tell them is if it's been one or two hits, I tell them, listen, you don't want me to take you out of the game. Let's start doing the right thing in terms of resting your brain and doing light cardiovascular exercise without any contact, no contact sports, no contact practice drills. Mm-hmm. Don't participate just yet. You can still hang out with the team. You still kind of, you know, hang out with them after their practice. But let's just work on getting you recovered, getting you into the right vision and balance therapy and cardiovascular conditioning. After we do that, now let's try to get you back into the practice drills. We go through the graduated exercise protocol first, and then we do the return to play protocol. And we do it the right way where they have to be symptom-free after with each stage. And then if they're not symptom-free, let's say they get their symptoms back, guess what? We start from stage, go back to zero again. We don't even go back to the previous step. We just go back to point A. And then okay, we go through the process again. If they do it the right way, I tell them, let's go back to the game. You now are allowed to compete. And let's say they do compete and they do fine, but then they sustain another concussion. I take them out again, and this time I take them out a little bit longer. And I tell them, we need to get this rested. You need to get your hydration, nutrition, vitamins, everything properly. I need you to strengthen, do a lot of bodyweight support exercises. And let's go back again. And so let's say they experience the same sort of concussion. Then we start talking about, let's change the sport around. Maybe the contact is a little bit too strong, and I still want you to be involved in some sports because obviously, you know, people are still dying from heart disease, which is the number one killer.
Right,
and
right.
Mental health is an issue. So we get them back in the game again, and we try, but a different game. Let's try a less intense contact sport. So maybe not, you know, not trying to bash football. I love it, but maybe not football. Maybe soccer. Maybe something different. Let's try basketball. We try it first. And then obviously, after we've tried different methods, then I'll tell them, you know what, maybe you can't play with this sport again, or maybe you can't play with this game. You know, let's think of different ways to be active. It's a long process. It's many visits. It's many follow-ups before we determine that the pay, you know, and a lot of times the parents are always on board. You know, as long as they really want what's best for their child. As long as I kind of make it very transparent to them from the beginning, and they know my intentions are really just the kind of the well-being for their son or their daughter, then I say, you know what? All right, let's just do this. Let's make it happen. We're it's a team effort, and a lot of times they're really great about it.
Yeah. On one hand, it's if you look at it as like an injury, like an ankle injury or a knee injury, your child is not. They can't go back because they can't run or whatever the case may be, but with the head, it's like I can still do it, so let me do it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an invisible injury. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's very frustrating. Just like it's just like rehabbing, you know, like an ACL. It takes a long time. They're like, I can run, I can throw the ball, so I'm going back in, and that's not a good thing in many cases.
And not only that, you have to also notice that it's not just about them being able to run, it's how long they can do it for. With concussions, the brain cannot tolerate a certain level of blood flow for too long. Mm. And so I have athletes who are super conditioned. I mean, we were talking elite athletes with low heart rates who, after a concussion, come in with significantly fast heart rates and low exercise tolerance overnight. And then they say, well, why did this happen? I say, well, the brain is concussed. And they don't understand that concept. And I tell them, well, good luck. Let's try running a mile. Let's see how you do. And they can't even do half without fatiguing and getting short of breath and they don't understand why overnight it's all of a sudden happened. And so making them aware of this is, you know, and their tolerance. I always tell them, I say, if you keep on doing, you know, competitions back to back and you don't take it easy, guess what's going to happen? You're more prone to error. You're more prone to you know, missing out on the ball or you know, whatever it is, or you're making the wrong move during the game than if you are to go sharp. And you have to understand your brain endurance is not going to handle it for too long.
Good stuff. Very interesting stuff. Dr. Christine Grease, Director of the Concussion Program at JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute, thank you very much for joining us on the program. It's been great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Joel. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
There you have it. For more info, HackensackMeridianHealth.org, or you can reach Dr. Grease at the Institute at 732-321-7000, extension 68363. I'm Joel Katz. Thanks for joining me on JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better.